It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My guest today is Max Romy. Max is a watercolor artist and outdoor filmmaker from Anchorage and is known internationally for his work. He has joined us before to tell us about his creative style of using watercolors in his films, focusing on the outdoors. Storytelling using pictures instead of words was born from his life with dyslexia. His grandmother was a huge influence, and he is currently visiting locations around the world that she visited, and he is recreating the sketches from her prolific collection. Since last visiting us, he has had two films show at the Banff Film Festival, If You Give a Beach a Bottle, and most recently, Footprints on Katmai. He is also the creator of the new Fish Creek art installation at Cuddy Park. Keep listening for more on Outdoor Explorer. This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. With me today is Max Romy. Max is a watercolor artist and outdoor videographer. He last joined us 3 years ago, so we have a lot of catching up to do. Welcome back to the show, Max.
I can't believe it's been 3 years.
I know. Like, isn't it crazy? It just flew, didn't it?
I think it had something about having a two-year-old or something like that. But it's, yeah, time moves real strangely when you have little kids.
Yes, it does. Everything shifts. I totally understand. I also have to put a little plug in. I asked you before we started if you've been on State of Art with Ammon Swenson, because I always feel like I'm stealing you from him, because he's the art guy, but I'm the outdoor person, but you bring both of them together.
I definitely live in the middle, and I think that's just such an Alaskan thing. Like, it's so hard not to let the outdoors influence what you do here, and it's just kind of fun to let the art in. Sometimes literally when it comes to painting outside here too. Like, the amount of smashed mosquitoes I have in my sketchbook is is upsetting.
It's part of the art, right?
Yes, often literally. Although it's been really interesting from like a painting perspective now with the temperature dropping, that just changes everything when it comes to actually painting outside here.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. But first, I want to remind everybody, kind of explain again your lifelong artistic journey and where you grew up and how you grew up and how you became an artist. And I know dyslexia plays a big piece in this.
It does. Yeah. Well, everybody starts as an artist. You know, everybody's done watercolor. We all finger paint. It's one of the most cool things about kids is they don't pretend at all. They just know that they're an artist. And it's something that happens maybe when we're around 12 that we think, oh, maybe I'm not. But that little artist is still in all of us. But my journey is kind of different because I grew up with dyslexia. I mean, I still have dyslexia. I am dyslexic. It doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. There's no cure.
It does not. Yeah. And it just means that reading and writing have always been a bit difficult. And I sort of see the world in a slightly different way. But it's one of those things that it actually led me to art through just, it's one of the few things that you can't misspell. And my grandmother, who is an amazing painter, really encouraged me to get into painting and to, like, you know, she would always put a sketchbook in my hand. And so for me, growing up in through high school, through middle school, even in college, being able to sketch and have that language of watercolor, that language of visual art was really a lifesaver because it gave me a voice. And when everybody can only really see the spelling mistakes, it allowed me to go past that. And it's actually turned into kind of a wild career, really like the dream job. And it's strange that something that was so frustrating as a kid, being dyslexia and just wishing that I could just have a normal brain like everybody else, led me to kind of really live my dream.
Mm-hmm. You really do have the dream. I went last night and I was looking at your YouTube channel and back at your website. I think your website is Trailbound Sketches, right? That's your website.
Yeah, trailboundsketches.com. And we just toss everything on there. But it's kind of this hodgepodge everything because it's just my world is watercolor, but it's also the incredible spot I live. And it's all these big ideas. And so much of the last several years have been trying to capture the big picture, pun intended on that one. But it's like, mm-hmm. how like there's just so many things going on. It's so complex. It's all over the place. And sometimes if you're lucky, like one single picture can kind of encapsulate it all. And it's just been several years of trying to chase those pictures down.
And you grew up as an outdoor kid, right? You were always outside and playing in the outdoors.
Yes. Not always willingly. I remember as a little kid, you know, being dragged up to the mountains on Saturday and screaming the whole way and then having an amazing time on the peaks and just what a great thing that was. And going back in the car and saying, like, why don't we do that all the time? And now that I have a little one of my own, I'm getting payback on that, you know, the screaming of the snowsuit and things like that, and then having a great time. But yeah, as a kid, it was just, you'd go out to these places and it would just be bigger and brighter and more colorful than you could ever imagine. And it's kind of fun too, as an adult, going back to some of these spots with little kids, because now, you know, I used to think that maybe it was only because I was 2 feet tall at the time, and that's why these places seem so big, or like the Grand Canyon, or, you know, Denali, or any of these spots. But when you do go back to them, even as an adult, it's amazing. They're just as big, they're just as bright, they're just as incredible as you remembered. And when it comes to art and trying to capture those, that's kind of the real challenge, because no photograph for me has ever come even close to like the scale and the size and the color of these spots. But sometimes a watercolor can get close.
Well, what's amazing, I always appreciate about your films, is how you take the film and your watercolors, and it becomes like a watercolor film almost, or a hybrid of watercolor and film. And it's just super, super creative. And I just watch it and I'm amazed. And then I watched one of your films last night, and I watched a couple actually. And then, like you are doing all that. I mean, you're putting that whole film together, right? Like integrating the watercolor and into the film piece of it.
Yeah. Well, full credit. I mean, like, you know, nobody does this stuff alone. So right, my family, my wife, my mom, I've got an incredible producer who works on the organization of this side of things, but yeah, the credits are a whole lot of my name. Just because I didn't know how to, like, well, I didn't know how to pay people for this stuff, but also I just didn't know how this is doing. So I did a lot of YouTubing. And so the general look is often like I have a film and then I'll be walking through a scene, say, and then there will be not just a mountain in the background, but a watercolor mountain, or perhaps in the case of Footprints on Katmai, maybe it's a shoe or one of those things where I just want to be able to show, when you get something stuck in your head, maybe like you can't unsee something, right? Like you learn about maybe the microplastics in like the ocean and you can't unsee it. And what I want to do is be able to paint it in so that it kind of feels how it looks in your mind, or maybe it looks how it feels in your mind. And so the process of that is kind of silly looking though, because it's, you know, I get the camera, I set it up, I try to keep my hands warm, click play, walk 30 feet back and then walk through the frame, and then at home make a painting and change it to the background and edit and do all this stuff. But the ultimate result is I'm trying to make stories and films that feel like how it was as a kid, but also the kind of stuff that I wish I had. Because growing up with dyslexia, I mean, there was like science books or, you know, research papers if you wanted to get into like the nitty gritty of any of this stuff. And it just felt so inaccessible. And so now I try to make those stories and those ideas and kind of those adventures that I wish that I could see when I was younger. And it's cool because you can. And if you wanted to see it, chances are you're not the only one. It's like raising your hand in class. You know, if you raise your hand and ask a dumb question, or you're the only one that you think that it's a dumb question, chances are there's like five or six people who weren't brave enough to raise their hand. So it can actually be a really great thing to make those ideas and those stories that you wish other people could see, because we all benefit from it.
I think one of the signature things that you do, when I try to explain to other people who you are, I'm like, you might have seen his work. Like you'll see a picture or a video and he's got a watercolor in the middle of it that he's holding up, that you haven't actually put it into the frame. You're actually holding it there, so it completes the picture. You've dropped the watercolor into where the actual mountain is, or I think that's really a signature piece that you do that is really fantastic.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I'm definitely not the only one to do that. I mean, I can just think other amazing artists like Jill Ritchie up in Fairbanks does a really great job with that stuff too. But it actually started as kind of a secret. I held up a picture of a glacier. I think I was up at Portage and I made a sketch of Portage but I was too embarrassed to post it on my own Instagram because I did done a lot of filmmaking. I've worked with Solomon. I was a filmmaker for them for a while, and I was too embarrassed to show the watercolor side because I thought I was a filmmaker and that was it. And I did the watercolor for myself, but not really for, it wasn't fancy. And so I really wanted to post it, but I was too afraid to do it on my own Instagram. So I created another one called Trailbound Sketches and posted it there just to kind of keep it away so nobody else would see it. And very quickly, that Instagram, I think my Max Romy one might have 12,000 people on it or something like it, but the Trailbound Sketches is like 90,000 or close to 100,000.
Wow.
So the little secret, like hidden one that I was too embarrassed to show quickly took off. But there's just something so magical about when you can hold up a piece of the puzzle. And I think that's what I didn't realize about art is often you go to a gallery and you see these pieces of art and they're good and it's fun and you can kind of get lost in a picture, which is great, but it's almost inverse. Like it's almost wrong because what the artist is seeing is just a tiny piece. And when it's in a gallery, that art is everything. That's all it is. That's the whole world. But the truth is when you're painting outside or painting in these places, or even if it's from a photo, that is just this tiny little puzzle piece in such a bigger puzzle. And that bigger puzzle is kind of the cool part. So it's fun to make a sketch and hold it up and just show how it is such a tiny piece of the puzzle, which is actually kind of the beautiful piece. You're never going to capture the big picture, but it's really fun to try.
Yeah. Well, people definitely know you for that because they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen those before.
Right. Well, and the thing is it's easy, too. I'll just say if anybody's listening to this and wants to give it a try, the landscape does the heavy lifting. I mean, I'm an okay artist. I would say I'm probably very efficient. I can make a pretty good painting pretty quick. But like if you hold up anything in a pretty place, it's amazing. It's like instant. It's like it's scary because these spots are so beautiful we live in. But really, just give it a try. Bring a little, bit of paper and maybe some pencils or watercolor with you next hike, and just try to make a little tiny sketch and hold it up and take a photo. And it's pretty cool how it's just like, the landscape. It really holds you up in a big way.
Yeah. Well, there's been plenty of famous artists up here who have definitely leaned on the landscape for their art. It's fantastic. If you are just joining us, you are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller, and my guest today is outdoor filmmaker and watercolor artist, Max Romy. The last time we chatted, like we said, was 3 years ago, and you had a film that was going to, at that point, it was the Banff Mountain Film and Book Festival. I think it's changed the name or...
No,
the name
same
change?
Festival. There's more people. Last time I went with a film about ocean plastics washing up in Katmai, Alaska, and it went, and it was during the pandemic, so there wasn't a ton of people there. But I just got back like a week ago from the Banff Mountain Film Festival with another film about ocean plastics washing up in Katmai, Alaska, using watercolor to be able to kind of share that big picture. Mm-hmm. And it was really fascinating, the transformation. Of course, there's more people this time, but just being able to share a story in that way was so effective. And it's so cool because it's like ocean plastics, which are plastics that end up in the ocean and kind of wash all over the world. Alaska in particular, we have a lot of them because we have more coastline than the rest of the US put together. We're kind of a leader in that space. But the issue is a lot of these plastics wash up on the shoreline and slowly break down into these little microplastics, which is actually a major issue because a microplastic is like the size of powdered sugar. Also, sorry for the major scientific explanation here. this is why I make art, right? So you can just see it and get it. But basically the plastics wash up on a shore, they break down in tiny little pieces that are smaller than microplastic or smaller than powdered sugar. Microplastics are tiny little things. On average, we eat about a credit card worth of these things per week.
Wow.
And they're in everything from our blood. They are being found in placentas, unborn babies, like babies inside the mom, kids who haven't eaten anything, like they're everywhere. And they wash up in Alaska. And so they're not from here. We're not throwing our trash in the ocean, but because it floats, because it shows up, when it goes into the shore in LA or, Taiwan or wherever it is, it floats all over the ocean, but it'll often end up on our shores where it breaks up and it's hundreds and thousands and probably millions of pounds of this stuff are currently on our coast breaking down into these tiny little plastics where they'll get into the fish, where they'll get into the trees, where they'll get into the deer. And so we kind of have a slow motion disaster on our hands here, because if we do nothing, then all of these little plastics are going to kind of infiltrate our entire state. They'll kind of poison it from the ground up. Just as we find nitrogen from salmon in the highest tree, you know, because it's like that cycle, these plastics are going to kind of follow that same route. So it's really scary stuff.
One of the things from Footprints on Katmai that was a takeaway for me was that in some parts of the ocean, microplastics outnumber phytoplankton.
Yes, they do.
Which, and phytoplankton is like what whales eat. I mean,
everything. I didn't even realize. Yeah. This is the crazy part about art, right? I just went there to go paint some pictures. I didn't even know. I kind of dive into all of this. But yeah, so phytoplankton are these tiny little plants that live in the ocean, and they take in CO2 and they spit out oxygen. It turns out they're like one of the biggest deals on the planet. Like, I used to think that trees were kind of where it was at, you know, like the rainforests, you know, you want oxygen, it's the rainforests. You want to save the planet, plant more trees. Well, it turns out that all the land plants on Earth, I mean, the savannas, the rain, everything, all the land plants, you put them all together, they only make 25% of the oxygen on Earth. Only 25%. Another 25% comes from basically seaweed. And then 50% of all the oxygen is made by phytoplankton.
Wow.
Which are these tiny little plants all over the place. And so if, say, you lose 10% of phytoplankton, you lose 5% of the world's oxygen. They also are responsible for like 30% or something like that of the CO2 that's consumed. So they're a really, really, really big deal, even though they're really, really tiny. And in a lot of places, these phytoplankton are outnumbered by microplastics, which is terrifying. Because if we do nothing, then all of these ocean plastics, you know, a milk jug or something like that, or a water bottle, as they break down, that milk jug or water bottle become thousands and thousands and millions of microplastics. And it's kind of a ticking time bomb, you know, like they're doing it now. We can pick them up now. But if we don't, if we let them become microplastics, there's nothing you can do. You can't filter the ocean for that small. And, you know, if they affect stuff like the phytoplankton, I mean, it's scary, but it's such a big topic. You know, we just spent 5 minutes trying to explain it. You can't even look at it directly. It's like staring at the sun, you know, like if you look directly at the sun, you're going to hurt your eyes. And that's how I feel about things like ocean plastics and, you know, these big changes is I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to. It's so scary and so confusing and so big. But art can kind of help you see it in a different way. It's not like sunglasses. It's like a cloud or something. If you put art in front of these big, scary things, it's no longer staring at the sun. It's like looking at a rainbow or a sun dog or, you know, something like that. And that's what we did with the film, is we looked at microplastics in the form of shoes. So I went out to the beaches of Katmai with the Ocean Plastics Recovery Project, which is one of the really cool groups here in Alaska, kind of trying to fight this stuff. And they pick up hundreds of thousands of pounds of ocean plastic per year, and they're working on trying to get it back into the system. So recycle it, use it for, you know, it, like, basically plastic is very recyclable, kind of get it back into the system, see it not as trash but as like treasure, you know, create an industry around it instead of just like having it be a burden. So there's an opportunity there. But I went out with them and I found these shoes. So I was filming, but also I kept on finding these shoes, which were washing up.
Had that even occurred to you that you were going to find shoes?
It's the wildest thing. You find a little bit of everything. And I think the shoes kind of hit me the most. So we found lifeboats. We found pieces of rigs. We found airplane wings. But also you find water bottles and shampoo bottles. You'll find toys, kids' bicycle helmets.
Somebody held up a spray bottle that still had liquid inside of it. And like a, you know, cleaning liquid or whatever. And we were able to spray it. Like, oh, that was one of the things in the film.
Cans of Pepsi that are still, you know, carbonated from Japan. We find the wildest stuff, but you'll also find shoes. And they wash up all the time. It's a little scary because there's always these stories of shoes washing up with feet still in them. So usually you kind of dump them out and there's always this this moment of terror.
Did you find any feet?
I've not found any feet yet, which I'm very glad for. That is the height of concern. I find all these shoes, and for some reason, the shoes just kind of hit me. It's like, this stuff that washes up on these shores feels so out of place, because we're talking like some of the most remote beaches on Earth. You know, Katmai is priceless. It feels untouched, but you can't walk across the grass without hearing the crunch of a water bottle. So when you find these shoes, for some reason, it became very personal. I found one shoe that had a footprint in it. It was like a Birkenstock Teva-y like thing.
Oh,
And it
wow.
had, like, I could see where somebody's toes kind of had, worn in the grooves. And just realizing that somebody was probably out there still walking around who didn't even know that their shoe was in one of the wildest places on earth being walked over by bears. You know, they're probably in LA or something like that. Or with how these currents are, this thing could have gone across the, Arctic or something like that, or in the Galapagos. And so it made me think about my shoes and how I can only account for probably, maybe a dozen. As an Alaskan, I feel like, you got to have probably a dozen pairs of shoes at any given time just because of how things
Something
go.
for
But
everything.
exactly. But like, I try to recycle them and make sure they go to Goodwill when they're done. But like, they take about 1,000 years to break down, a lot of these
Oh
shoes.
my gosh.
And so mine are definitely, every shoe I've ever had is still out there. And I can't account for all of them. And there's not a 0% chance that one of my shoes is currently in the ocean taking a crazy journey like this one did to Katmai. And so that's kind of what started to trick my brain a little bit. And so I ended up actually painting these shoes, which is strange because I'm in arguably the most beautiful place on earth. I have sketchbooks, I have people looking out for bears for me, I have all the opportunity to sketch one of the most pristine landscapes that has ever existed. And instead, I'm sketching grimy, grubby, ocean-scoured shoes. It came with like this idea that this film could be around these shoes and these footprints and the footprints that we're making in places like Katmai without even realizing it. And so that's kind of where art can come in, is I'm not going to watch a film about ocean plastics if I can help it. It's scary stuff, but when it comes to a crazy adventure about tracking down some shoes in the most remote beaches on Earth, that's something I can get behind. And that's the kind of film that I wish that I had seen as a kid. So started making it.
You have this sketchbook, and then all of a sudden, everybody who's helping clean up also is like handing you all these shoes that they're finding because they realize that you're on the shoe quest now. And you end up with this huge, I mean, that bag has to be 5 feet tall, 5 feet in circumference of just shoes.
Yeah, it's a super sack. They're the white bags. That's what we use to kind of fill with trash. I called it the super sack, because, it was full of shoes. I can't remember the exact dimensions, but there was probably about 300 shoes in that one. And it's just,
Did you ever
it's.
find pairs or did you only find singles?
We found a lot of left shoes, and apparently some of these beaches will only get lefts, and some of them will only get right because it depends as they float. They catch the wind in different ways, which is
Yeah, there's just
fascinating.
a little curve to the left and the right that might pick up a different current or whatever. That's fascinating.
Exactly. Yeah, the stuff you find out there is kind of bonkers. When you saw one, you'd see them everywhere. So we saw Air Jordans, or not Air Jordans, maybe Air Jordans. I can't remember which is the fancy one. But we found Jordans, we found basketball shoes, we found boots, we found steel-toed shoes, flip-flops, little kid shoes, and every one of them has this story, right? Because they were all likely worn. Sometimes a container ship will spill, but a lot of these were just shoes, probably in a landfill somewhere, maybe. Somebody lost one next to a stream, but ultimately all water will make its way to the ocean, and once you're in the ocean, you could end up anywhere. And so it was really just this, it was the kind of story that I have a whole lot more questions than I have answers for, but
Yeah, because to me, like, okay, so first of all, were shoes like the number one item you found out there, or was it like plastic bottles, or do you have any sense of what the number one item was? Because my question is, if shoes go to a landfill, and they're making their way into water, that's problematic too, that we have landfills that are feeding into bodies of water.
well, here's where the storage gets so complex, right? So, shoes were not the only thing we found out there. We found like water bottles. We found a little bit of everything. The scary thing is most ocean plastic sinks. So what you're finding on these beaches is just a very small percentage of what's actually out there. The vast majority of it is currently on the bottom of the ocean, breaking itself up into millions of tiny microplastics, and we're not going to see that until it's in us. So that's terrifying. But the small percent that does actually make it to our shores, which is pickupable and grabbable right now before the next storm blows it back out to sea, is enormous. You're still talking hundreds of thousands of pounds, and a lot of it's bottles. We do find buoys. We find, just really everything from
There
everywhere.
was a huge rope, like a huge like ocean
Yeah,
aquatic
halyard
rope,
line, I
like
think it's called.
thick and
Yeah.
yeah.
Those are massive. The team that picks us up is amazing. I mean, these are remote places, but you just have to, your problem solving has to be so good. Detangling ropes from logs, the stuff you find. I mean, it's really like a testament to them, especially because I wasn't a whole lot of help because I was just sitting there painting shoes.
And they're like,
But
why did we
they
bring this guy along?
basically, yeah, who's this? He's not even taking good pictures of us. He's just like sketching dirty old shoes. But they do an amazing job. But our shoes, the main issue, they're not. They're probably the most relatable thing that we found out there. But it's really this bigger picture issue. Like we have so much of this stuff, this plastic that will last so long, but it's not the problem. We have lots of materials that last a while. It's the fact that we treat it disposably. And 40% of all plastic that's ever made is going to be thrown away in one use. And we make more plastic than we ever have ever, even though it's great stuff. I mean, it makes planes lighter, so we don't have to use as much jet fuel. It makes food last longer, medical sides are more sterile. Like plastic is really useful. We wear it, but it's the fact that we treat it like trash is the problem and don't invest in actual recycling solutions, or pick it up once it is in a place like the ocean. In fact, a lot of it will ship over to Asia, or we used to. And then it doesn't always get the treatment that it does here in the US. So it's really kind of this bigger, not in my backyard problem,
Right, it's a
but
global problem.
it's a global problem. But the issue with plastic is it's always going to end up back in your backyard. So a lot of times this is stuff sent to Asia from LA, where it was picked apart and then ended up back in a river, ended up back in the ocean, and then ended up right back in our backyard and in Alaska. But if we can solve the problem here, we can solve it anywhere.
And the danger, just to remind people that these are what's called forever chemicals, PFAS. Once they're in us, they stay in us, and it's been well documented that there are health problems associated with these forever chemicals in our body.
It is, yeah. And I didn't learn too much about that until one of the sponsors of the film, Keen, the shoe company, they actually came in and said, "We love this and we'd love to make this possible," which is kind of a wild thing when a shoe company sees a film that you make about how there's too many shoes and it's an issue. And they came in.
Did
But
you get
they
some Keens off the beach too?
I never found a pair of Keen, a whole lot
Oh,
of
interesting.
bogs, no extra tufts ever, which I was surprised, but that's just because, it's not Alaskans who are putting the stuff in the ocean. It's coming over from everywhere else. But yeah, the forever chemicals, which is where Keen comes in, they don't use forever chemicals in their stuff, but it's like these chemicals are part of a lot of plastics. PFAS, there's a whole slew of chemical names, and if they become part of these microplastics, the microplastics become little tiny sponges, and they can kind of the microplastics help these forever chemicals get everywhere. So it's really this kind of horrible 1-2 punch of these little tiny pieces of plastic that are more or less indestructible, full of little tiny chemicals that are super disruptive and really dangerous, and together they can kind of get all over the place. So it's a scary situation, and sometimes art can make it a little bit lighter, but there is a lot of hope too, because the Ocean Plastic Recovery Project, GOAK, the Alaska Sea Grant. I mean, there's a lot of people working on these issues and doing a really great job. But the problem is Alaska has more coastline than the rest of the United States combined, and there's only 700,000 of us or so, and it's just there's not enough people to make this all go around in the way it needs to. So we need to turn off the tap and we need to drain the tub, and there's just we're kind of outnumbered a little bit. It's like a slow-moving Exxon Valdez oil spill, but we don't get the press.
It's the frog in the pot of water, right? When it starts cold and then slowly gets hot, the frog doesn't notice it, and then the frog is dead.
Exactly. Yeah. The frog in the pot of plastic in this case.
Are there certain beaches, like around that Katmai area, is there a certain pattern of circulation that drops more plastic in that particular area, or is every coastline in Alaska have debris on it, man-made debris?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people who have traveled. Rachel Gordon, one of the amazing people who was on this trip, she's a really cool surf guide as well, and she's traveled to some
Oh
of these
yeah, she
incredibly
would
remote. beaches. Yeah, total, like, classic Alaskan, you know, super, super cool, like, does a little bit of everything. But also, she's traveled to a lot of these remote beaches, and it's, she said she hasn't seen a beach that hasn't been impacted. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. maybe it's some more than others, but Alaska, we have more coastline, but a lot of these spots are called catcher beaches, and it's just where the currents are and how the mm-hmm. beach is. It's almost like you put your hand into a laundry machine, is how I heard it described. You know, you put your hand into a dryer with all the clothes on, all this clothes are going to kind of pile up, which is a concern, but it's also this crazy opportunity where you could grab this stuff now. We have people who are in the middle of the ocean trying to dredge the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, and they're doing it. They're getting seaweed and things like that too, but they're getting a lot of plastics. But Alaska has this natural system of these islands and shores and coastline with all of these plastics that just naturally wash up, and you can get to these places and pick them up by hand. It's one of the, you know, wild just coincidences of how it all works. And so if people are willing to do it, you can really do some good work, and we'll pick up, you know, 100,000 pounds in a few weeks compared to a lot of these enormous operations that are trying to get just, you know, a couple tons off the beaches in the East Coast, or, you know, a couple tons at a time in the ocean. Like Alaska could do some major, major damage to the ocean plastics problem, but mm-hmm. if only there are people there.
Right. It, like everything, there's probably just not enough people to go out and do this, or enough boats.
Right. Because, people and funding. Yeah. And you got to get there. Yeah. I do. My dream is I picture this almost ragtag armada of, like, these are places that only Alaskans could get to. Some take mm-hmm. planes in the Kayak Island, which is where the Ocean Plastic Recovery Project is currently working out of. Tons of ocean plastic. They're pulling hundreds of thousands of pounds off this, but they have to use helicopters because it's so, like, remote. But, you know, you can drop somebody and they can pick up their body weight per hour, you know, in, mm-hmm. in ocean plastic. So it's really this very unique Alaskan situation that, frankly, only Alaskans would really be, you know, in the position to actually handle. But it's really cool seeing what is happening, even just the handful of operations that are out there, including, you know, Chris Pallister and Goi Care also doing a great job. But yeah, it's kind of a David and Goliath moment, because it's just going to keep on showing up year after year after year if we don't do something to the bigger problem.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. We are going to take a short break, and when we return, the conversation with Max Romy will continue.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
This is Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Lisa Keller. My conversation with filmmaker and watercolor artist Max Romy continues. Let's talk about your grandmother and the influence she had on just who you are, and then also this journey that you've been taking lately to revisit places that she sketched and how they stay the same or how they change. I saw a really neat little video that you did where you'd gone to where there was a tree and a rock face, and you were able to find the exact spot that she had been at and done her sketch. So let's just start with her influence on you from the beginning and the sketching.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. The whole Footprints on Katmai film sort of started because my grandmother had sketched Katmai 34 years ago, maybe 35 years ago. And so she had been there before I was born. And there's this amazing sketch of a beach. And I kind of wanted to see if that beach was still the same spot. And then I went there and all these other ideas and things kind of came up and went down the rabbit holes. But just trying to find one of the sketches is sort of what led me there. And she's the one who taught me how to paint. She's the one who kind of encouraged me to get going. But she died 10 years ago or so, and she left behind 6,000 sketches from all over the world.
Wow.
I mean, just, and she only started maybe when she's 30 or 40. I mean, just really incredible how sketches she made in her life. And we're talking Antarctica, the Galapagos, Alaska, you know, Ushuaia, Chile, like sketches from everywhere. And it was only when I started going through them and scanning them did I realize that you could use these things like a map. So there's only one place on Earth where you can stand where a lot of these things line up. So there's mountains maybe and trees and a rock. And if you can find the mountains, then, and you can find the rock, then if you move 10 feet to the left, they might not that rock might not line up with that mountain anymore. So only once you find the exact spot where it lines up is where she was standing when she made the sketch. So I've been trying to track down her sketches from 30, 40, 50 years ago, stand exactly where she stood, and then make the same sketch in the same place with the same materials as a way to reconnect with her. And like I was saying, you know, as a dyslexic, words have always been kind of tough, but painting and sketching is like its own language. You can see when you're there what somebody saw and that puzzle piece that they try to fill in. And it's almost like they're speaking to you through those lines. And it's been the coolest way to kind of reconnect with my grandma. But it's also been interesting because sometimes things have changed a lot. In some cases, it's almost like, you know, she was there 10 minutes before I was. There was one spot in France where even the birds and skiers were in the same place. And that was 3 or 4 decades ago. And it was it was like this, you know, she could have been on the gondola before me. I mean, it was so fresh. But then in other places like Portage, you know, it took me almost a whole day to find out where she sketched, because not only was the visitor center not there when she was there, but the glacier is gone. So I had to line things up from the like mountains and the bushes. And I actually was able to find it. Turns out she sketched on that bridge right before Whittier. But it's so wild how art can lead you down these paths, and how something as simple as a sketch, which is why everybody should go outside and just try to make a sketch if you can. It's so cool where this stuff can lead you, or your kids or your grandkids. But just the act of trying to find some of these little sketches that were just hastily made has really given me a ton of purpose, and is my plan now, potentially for the rest of my life, because it might take me about 300 years to track down all the 6,000 of these. But my plan is to try to see how many of these I can find, and really whether it means crisscrossing the world or kind of diving into some of these spots, trying to go back to some of these places and make the same sketch in the same place, and then make one of my own as well to be able to pass on to that next generation.
Did she, like when she made a sketch, did she say where it was? So you had some idea of where to start. Like, you knew you had to get to France to find this one. Did you have some sort of general idea because she marked it or anything?
It's kind of a wild scavenger hunt. Often these books will be marked, you know, it might say France to Galapagos on the cover.
That's pretty wide area.
Right. Oh, yeah. Just like half the globe. And they are often in sequential order. Mm-hmm. And so there'll be, you know, maybe a sketch of Arizona, and then a sketch of Colorado, and then another sketch of Colorado, and then one of Wyoming. So you got to like kind of hit the map here and really look. And I would say maybe a quarter of them are labeled, but, you know, the spots are not always there. So what it often comes down to is tracking down somebody local who knows a little bit more about the spot, you know, asking at a lot of gas stations, just sort of pointing at things. And it's cool because you end up meeting the most interesting characters on these journeys. So it's been a really cool way to get to know people in a landscape a little bit better. But the journey has been fun because it's almost like my grandmother gave me a coloring book that is part of an adventure. But the people that I'm meeting along the way, that's kind of where it's really at. And I think that's always the case for art. We pretend like the finished product is a framed painting on a wall in a gallery. But I think the truth is it's the process that actually matters. And when you can see that, it makes it a whole lot more fun.
This has to be part of a bigger project that you're envisioning, isn't it?
I mean, bigger
can
project.
Can you give up any details?
I'll literally do this forever. Yeah. I mean, I hope to be able to share more. At first, I was thinking I should make this part, you know, make a big long video, a documentary people could watch. But the truth is, I mean, she sketched so many places. I think I'll literally be doing this until I can't sketch anymore.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's going to be onto my kids and hopefully my grandkids. So we'll see how it goes. But my plan is to start making videos on YouTube. So at least I'll be able to share it, because perfectionism is such an issue of artists and just people in general. We won't start something unless we know we can do it well, but if you can just do something, you should. So that's our plan right now, is we're going to put a video out every single week. Either we'll try to track down one of her sketches, or I'll make one and hide it and leave it for somebody else to kind of paint it forward in the way that she did for me. And so
I noticed that you've been doing that, because you know, I follow you, I keep track of you, and which makes it all the more horrible that I haven't called you in 3 years. Because
that's
watching.
Okay. Like I said, I thought it had been a month because of, you know, having a kid, but I have been hiding little sketches, which has been a lot of fun.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, I made these little tiny trail tiles because I needed perfectionism, right? I needed a deconstructed sketchbook, because when it's bound, it like feels permanent, and I'd always skip the first page because I, you know, what if it ruined it? So I basically made little tins full of watercolor paper, but they've been great because I can hide them. So what I've been doing is I, you know, make a little sketch of, you know, something fun, birch trees perhaps. And then on a walk with my kiddo, or, you know, if we're driving down to Seward, or if I'm traveling to go film something and the Grand Canyon, I'll leave these little sketches and then tell people about it on Instagram. And then the first person to find it gets to keep it. So I don't sell commissions anymore, because the pressure was too much for me, but I will give away paintings all day long. And so that's kind of been really fun. It's just to hide these little tiny works of art all over the place, let people know, let them find it. But that's the kind of spark that kind of got it going for me, like seeing my grandma's sketches, kind of getting that going, and leaving these little sparks has been a really fun way to paint it forward. But also, I'm seeing other people do it too, which is so fun, because it's scary to paint art. But if you're making it for somebody else, even if you don't know who that person is, suddenly it becomes easy. And if I can still get that, if I can still make it, then I don't actually care, you know, if I hold on to all these little things, and to know that they're in people's houses and desks and little tiny pieces of art, it's just so cool to be able to share some of that. So it's, you know, that spark got started for me when I was just a little kid, but it's those little sparks that I think make a big difference in what often feels like a pretty stormy world.
So, number one, where do you walk most often with your son, and how hard are these to find?
There's a whole lot in Airport Heights. I mean, that's, they often go within half an hour, I'd say. I just
went
at the zoo the other day, and I know it's gone, but I don't know where it went. I'm always so curious. I wish people would tell me where they end up, because it's not like
you're
stealing.
And you put your name on it and everything, hey, contact me, and, or do you do anything like that?
I don't say contact me. I probably should. Okay. Maybe I should bribe people. Like, if you contact me, I'll give you a little tiny paint kit or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
They definitely disappear pretty quick, which is a lot of fun, but it's, that's kind of the coolest thing about art, is just thinking of like how many places it could end up. And I think that just sort of like the shoes, you know, like just to think of these spots where your shoes could be right now is a little scary. There's negative footsteps we make, but there's also positive ones. And I think art is kind of one of those for me. It's so easy to think about all of the ways that I'm, you know, destroying the world, or how it feels like it right now. But there's also equal amounts of ways that it feels like your footsteps could actually make a huge difference. And for me, it's just these little tiny sketches, little videos, things like that. It's the ripple effects can be enormous. And just like how my grandmother's sketchbooks, which you probably didn't think much of. I mean, she made big, fancy, beautiful paintings and amazing quilts, but it's these sketchbooks that are treasure to me.
Yeah, and are living on and creating something new along the way.
Exactly. And she probably thought nothing of it. And I think it's probably the same for a lot of us. You know, we think it's the gallery piece that people actually care about when we're gone, but it might be something totally different. And so it's worth doing those little sketches. It's worth dragging a piece of paper on your next hike. It's worth giving a little card or a little note to somebody, because it's those little things that can make the big difference.
She could totally live on forever, because there's that whole saying about you really die when the last person says your name. And so your child, who has never met his great grandma, will have these books and have her name and maybe carry that on too. So that's a pretty immortal thing. It could be, you know,
it's pretty cool. I mean, I say her name a lot because I'm frustrated, because it's like, Lou, why didn't you label this? Why am I driving around the back roads of Colorado in search of some townhouse in the mountain? Like, what on earth? But yeah, it's really cool to be able to know and just to observe. I mean, there's something so cool about a sketch. It's just a time just to sit down and just watch the world go a little bit slower, which I kind of need a lot having a 2-year-old. It's like, boy, he moves so fast. But
yeah,
just being able to make a sketch, I think if more people could do it, we'd be a whole lot better off. Or at least when you do it, you feel a lot better off. And so
yeah,
anything I can do to encourage people to just sit down and make some marks on a sheet of paper. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to be perfect. In fact, it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. The perfect stuff is boring. It's the fun, messy sketches that have 3 or 4 squash mosquitoes on them. That's what you're going to look back at and smile. And it kind of yeah. holds all of those feelings in it.
Last time we talked, I think your son had just been born. It was very close to the time, or you were about to have him. I can't remember now. It was right around that.
I don't remember either. Yeah. It's like the parent amnesia.
If he's 2, then, and we spoke in October of 2021 was the last time we had an interview. So that means that maybe your wife was pregnant at the time.
Yeah, or a glimmer in the eye or something. Yeah, it's amazing how
we definitely talked about it. I remember talking about it. So, but how has that changed your perspective on the world? Because obviously, having a child, it just really changes everything to be a parent.
It's so cliche, isn't it? And I'm so frustrated too, because now I'm the one saying all the cliche stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, it really, it's not about, you know, me. It's about them, you know, like all
right,
of this
it's about
stuff.
The future now. Yeah, you it can see is. So much into the future now. So
yeah, but I think it's the small things that I'm really appreciating. You know, I used to think that in order to make like a good sketch or a good video, you had to go to the ends of the earth. You know, if you weren't in an incredible place, could you really make incredible art? And having a little guy who is just like absolutely fascinated by a moose walking through the yard, eating a pumpkin off our front yard.
Yeah.
It makes you appreciate that actually this is amazing, you know, or Flat Top or Blueberry Hill is unbelievable.
Right.
It's the coolest stuff. And I think it's so easy to go on Instagram and see all this crazy, you know, just people doing amazing things in amazing places, or, you know, the world feels like it's burning. And it's just so easy to kind of get pulled back and forth and all of that. And having a little kid just has let me see these little things that are in front of my face the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that has been such a gift. If you can share that too, like, you don't have to have a little kid, you know, you can mm-hmm. really, we all got that because we all have that little kid in us too. At one point we were all kids sitting on a carpet with a thing of markers or crayons and paper and just like having a blast and just absolutely, you know, loving, just basking in the sun like a cat making something. And for some reason we get this idea in our head that happiness has to be a new car or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You know, it doesn't take much to get back there. You just gotta kinda mm-hmm. you just gotta kinda be open to it and let those little things feel magical again.
If you are just joining us, you are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Lisa Keller, and my guest today is outdoor filmmaker and watercolor artist Max Romy. Last time we talked, you were planning to stay close to home that winter. You were going to do adventures within an hour of your house, and you did some sort of, was it some sort of 24-hour solstice sketchathon or something? So you were outside.
Yeah, I got real cold for a while. In the hopes of making, I mean, what I was aiming to do is try to paint, you know, a lot of things real close to home and just kind of mm-hmm. see those adventures there. And what it turned into was a whole lot of winter watercolor painting, which mm-hmm. it is not an easy thing. It turns out water freezes in the winter in Alaska. I don't know what medium I was thinking.
Yeah, I know.
But there are some tricks. Like if you add moonshine or gin to your water, it actually keeps it from freezing for longer. It doesn't help you from freezing, which is, turns out that was the weak link. But I ended up making all of these kind of sketches in and around Anchorage. And it was cool just to find in the Chugach Range alone, just all of that inspiration, places that I'd been for a while. When you sit and paint and actually wait a while, you see new things, even though you might have hiked that hike a dozen times. When you just sit there for an hour, that, you know, that's when the mountain goat walks up or the ptarmigan shows up. And all of a sudden, like I made the phases of the ptarmigan. I painted all 108, you know, ptarmigan from winter to spring to winter, and just, you know, imagining how they would change. Or I did paint from sundown to sunup on the longest night of the year on top of Flat Top Peak too, which is a very cold one. Oh my gosh, that was a mistake.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, you really like you don't have to do you don't have to go to the crazy places to make something amazing. And we really have no excuse here in Alaska either because
Well,
we
we're
live
so
in the
lucky.
crazy
It's all
place.
right there. Yeah, I mean,
It
I from Footprints on Katmai, your opening and your close, I'm like, oh yeah, I recognize those areas he's walking through. I mean, they're very close to home, you know?
Exactly. It's like, have you ever, read a good book or something when they're talking about some description of food? And it's like, it's a pretty mundane thing, but it just sounds so good when you hear it described out like that. I feel like that's landscapes in Alaska a little bit, when you're just like slogging through alders because you took a wrong trail on the power line trail and you're just like, ugh. But then you see a photo of it from somebody else and you realize that you actually live in one of the most amazing spots on earth. Or in my case, like I traveled all over the world. I was, a filmmaker chasing runners all over the place, and I saw the most amazing places on earth. I took photos of them, bucket list stuff, and none of them compared to Alaska. It was just like kind of checking these things off and realizing Alaska has everything except for the people, and that makes it even more incredible. Frustrating when it comes to like, how do we fix these problems? But it's there is nowhere I would rather be, and I'm just so excited for, being able to share this place with a little person who's just as enthusiastic about bugs as they are mountain peaks and willing to see everything in between.
I also have to point out, I appreciate that you used local gin to keep your watercolors flowing and your water flowing. I mean, that was
It's
pretty
key. Yeah, you've
cool.
got to use your local gin. You can use isopropyl alcohol as well. I should make a video. Maybe I'll put that on the YouTube. But the ratio is key. So like 30 degrees to maybe 20. You just need a splash. It doesn't take that much. 20 to zero, you need about half. And then zero to negative 20, just good luck. It's a survival of the fittest. We'll see your fingers do. It's not worth losing one. At that point, it's just a matter of trying to keep yourself warm. And that might just be pure gin, but it's really interesting. Yeah, Anchorage Distillery was they were very kind to give me all the gin I needed. And I promised it was for watercolor. It actually was, but they were real trusting in me. Some random artist comes up, please, I need your gin for painting, and they obliged.
Do you have you have some classes now? So do you have like outdoor painting classes, and do you do those all winter and take people outside in the winter to paint?
Haven't done that too much. That's a tough one. And I do think everybody should try it. If you're listening to this in Alaska and you're like, that's not me, I'm not even painting. Even if you just make a single mark on a sheet of paper, you can always finish that stuff up inside later, which is totally fair. Like, it's like running a mile on Everest, right? You're not going to run your fastest time up Mount Everest. You might run your fastest time if you fall off Mount Everest, but you only do that once. And it's kind of one of those things where it's not easy to paint outside in Alaska. And a lot of the artists make it look easy, but they don't show you the 2 weeks that it took to get the right thing. But it is still cool. And often what I would suggest is just make yourself a coloring book. Basically do what my grandma did. Just go out with a pen, maybe a pencil, just sketch out some lines, make some notes, make yourself a coloring book, and then fill it in somewhere cozy with some good tea. And I think that's kind of a lot of the fun is if you make a mark outside, it almost holds your memories in that place. It's like a mosquito in amber or something. It's like it traps those memories in that line if you make it outside. And then you can finish it up later and add whatever you need afterwards. But I do have a couple classes. We have some tutorials we've been putting on. There's a really cool one through the Kenai Mountain Turning and Arm Heritage Area. The KMTA sponsored a tutorial, so it's 100% free to sign up for right now. And it covers a different sketch in three different spots. So there's one for Portage, there's one for Seward, there's one going to be one for Whittier. We release one every 2 weeks, and they make these really fun panoramas. So you make four different sketches, learn about these cool places, and then they make a really cool panorama, and they're 100% free. I think normally they're like $75, but yeah, if you want, definitely worth trying the inside version, and then once you learn, take it outside.
So your biggest, or maybe I shouldn't say biggest, but your most recent, I guess it's a big public art installation, was the Fish Creek art installation that just opened like a month ago. And I was going to go to the opening. I missed it because I'm like, oh, here's my chance. I can see
Oh, you
Max
missed it.
and
There's like a whole tureen of hot chocolate, and we had to drink all of it. It was amazing.
Oh, I totally missed out. That's bad on me for sure. I should have gone.
That's okay. No, there's still a chance because it's there. It's okay. It's by Cuddy Pond. It's a giant table, basically. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. It's got the original name of Fish Creek and a lot of really cool history. The Friends of Fish Creek did a great job with all of that. But it's also this really fun watercolor map. And actually, if you download an app, there's a QR code. If you just download it, it takes you to Avenza. You download the map. And it's basically like the Marauders map from Harry Potter, where it shows you a little tiny blue dot and you're just on the actual map. So there's this watercolor mm-hmm. map, you're actually on it. And Fish Creek is this amazing spot. It's a lot of people mostly know the estuary where on mm-hmm. the coastal trail, it goes into the ocean, but it used to go basically all the way up in Anchorage. It had salmon in it. It was really amazing. And then it kind of got buried as Anchorage got built. But there's a lot of efforts to both appreciate the creek and its history, but also revitalize a lot of it because there's enormous benefits for having these things open to the air, not only fish potentially, but also just like the, you know, stormwater runoff. It cleans places, it raises property value. It's just good stuff in general. And so this map kind of shows you where it is currently flowing underground. So you can actually travel this thing, even though there's this city there. And it's just one of those fun things that art kind of helps you see things in different ways. And so they reached out to make one of these really fun maps, but it's really, like, you definitely got to go give it a shot. But it might
also
change the way. Yeah, it's like it changes the way you see both Fish Creek and Cuddy Pond in that area, but also like all of Anchorage, you know, as mm-hmm. one of these kind of living, breathing spots that we live, which is also just the fact that you can find these little oases in downtown is so mm-hmm. cool. And I kind of forget it on a daily basis.
So we're getting to the end of our time of chatting, but I, of course, have to ask you, what did I miss? And I know that you do have some future plans, but not quite ready to reveal the whole thing. But you do have some projects in your head, of course.
That makes it mysterious sounding. Yeah,
no. It is very well, the way you said it to me before we started recording, it did sound very mysterious. So is there anything you can share with what's going on in the future besides, you know, pursuing more sketches that your grandmother did and things like that? Is there anything else going on that we should know about?
I think one of the biggest thing is just I'll be making more videos. The plan mm-hmm. is to do a video per week, releasing those on YouTube, making them available to everybody, and just kind of showing the behind the scenes. I feel like as an artist, a lot of times people only see the fancy finished product, but I think the journey there is almost more interesting than the finished product sometimes, especially in Alaska. I mean, just the journey anywhere here is often way more intense than anywhere else. And so that's kind of the plan, is to just mm-hmm. sort of show the behind the scenes. It'll be on Trailbound Sketches on YouTube, but I can't wait to be able to kind of open that up and make some mistakes together, because that often mm-hmm. creates some of the most interesting art. And of course, diving more into the ocean plastic side, working on some fun stuff with Keen, and just kind of sharing this unbelievably colorful world we live in, one sketch at a time.
Well, Max, it's just been great catching up with you again. I'm not going to let 3 years go by again before I interview you.
Well, you got to find one of these sketches. They'll be everywhere, but yes. You got to be a little quick. Just sort of walk around Airport Heights and you might be able to grab one here before it's gone.
Like Airport Heights down by the bike trail or just on the street?
Oh, can't make it too easy. Yeah, sorry, what I should have said. Yeah, just walk around Anchorage. They'll be a little bit everywhere.
Okay. I really want to find one of your sketches, so I'm going to try. Thanks so much for joining me today, Max.
I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's life moves really fast. Make sure to take some time and slow the world down and make a sketch and paint it forward for somebody else.
Thanks to my guest, Max Romy. You can find out more about Max and his art on the Outdoor Explorer page on alaskapublic.org. The show is produced by Tobin Shelby with help from Ammon Swenson. My name is Lisa Keller, and from all of our hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening and we'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.